Well, hi there. It is great to be back. We're going to be starting here now in Module 4 of this Day 2 Jumpstart. Very excited here about this topic, UI and controls. We're going to be showing a lot of cool things that you're probably going to have in your apps when you're developing. And this is a look at where we have been and with regard to our agenda for the day. We've already talked about design, develop, and working with contracts. Now it's going to be about UI and controls. And specifically, we're going to mostly be in code for this whole module, but we're going to look at the WinJS controls, and we're going to then address the app bar uniquely because it's like a first-class citizen as far as controls are concerned, because it's going to be used in a similar way throughout the operating system and other apps. And then we're going to talk about a very important thing, which will provide a little clarity on a little battle we had earlier, and that is on handling view state changes, what happens in Snapped and Fill, and so forth. So let's start, though, by going back to the agenda and looking at what we mean when we're saying WinJS controls. You know, when you think of controls, sometimes in other environments, you think of like a binary, or you think of some tangible thing that you're putting somewhere. And yet with WinJS controls, what we're really talking about is usually typically taking a div and applying this attribute, the data-win-control attribute to it, and then specifying what it is that we're the name of the control, and then potentially some options to set on that control, which means that there's nothing that's going in your HTML that's actually a violation of any HTML. I mean, it's really good. So, I mean, I think that's really a fascinating thing that has happened, is that we're creating pure HTML and yet adding all this dynamic behavior through the magic of these WinJS controls and using these data-win dash control attributes. So, without any further delay, I would like to now go ahead and demo some of these controls. So we're just going to have a heyday going with various ones, and I'm going to start right now with one of the simplest ones that can be implemented. And I'll go over into the home page. And right now, in fact, let me go ahead and run this application first so we can see what's on the screen, so we're going to see what's going to be different. I'll go ahead and execute. And this is on the home page right now. All I have is a button and the Jumpstart Demos title. So not very exciting, but we're going to add something to it that's a little interactive. Yeah. So let me go back and let's do this here. Right after the button. In fact, maybe I'll even create a div as a container for it. I'm going to go over into the toolbox. So I'm going to stop the execution here. And for the sake of simple, you know, imagine I'm a really fast typer here. And shazam! We have ourselves a new control. This control is called winjs.ui.rating in terms of its type, and the ID, I call it rater. Now, what I want to do is let you see what would happen if I were typing this attribute. I can go in now and see, and I'll type that again so you can see the list. I'm getting IntelliSense here.
That's helpful.
That is very helpful. So when you want to know what's available, you can go ahead and scroll down this IntelliSense-based list and find out what all the different controls are. So I really like that we can see all the different things, and of course we're going to be touching on quite a few of those. But I will go back to what I had done, and that is the rating. Now the rating just happens to have something called a max rating, which means when you want to do a rating for anything, you know, what typically is it that you want to rate between? You know, boy, I tell you what, there's some fundamental arguments that people might have as far as, in fact, I think it's a heated debate sometimes. Do you rate between 1 and 5? Do you rate between, you know, 1 and 7 or 1 and 10 or whatever the case is? What do you feel like, Mr. Jeremy, I should put for this maximum rating? Meaning, what is the scale of our rating going to be?
Five. Five's the global standard,
oh,
right?
Oh, okay. Five. So be it. So I'm going to put five in there. And now that I have that done, I'll go ahead and run it. Now, I think that's kind of cool to know that that was pretty much all I had to do. In fact, adding the data-win-options was not even required. I mean, that's only if I wanted to affect the setting. So let's see what this is going to look like.
I wonder if we could determine, based on the default value of the max ratings property, what is the global standard for...
Yeah, touche. Yeah, we both know the answer to that. But alas, we will take a look, and look at that. I have 5 stars just waiting for me to immerse into that content. Now, if I go into... Whoops. Let me escape back out of there. Let me go back into the app. If I go into this and just start hovering over these stars, notice I get tooltips that let me know what the rating is. And as I progressively move across, I'm also seeing that it is hovering and giving that, okay, if you go here, you're looking like 4. Hopefully this is a 5-star demo, so I'll go ahead and click there. And it preserved that setting or that rating. Of course, I can access that programmatically. But the reason why I wanted to start with the rating as an example is because it can really be, in this example, that simple. Just declaratively put it on the page and use it. And now that I gave it an ID of rater, I can go into my code and I can start extracting from that rating exactly what it is that I need. What did they select? There's other options with the rating where if you wanted to display that rating to the user and show what the average rating has been so far based on the statistical data you've received, you could do that. So you can have a lot of fun with this. Another thing that you could do with the rating that is really nice in terms of styling is Jeremy showed earlier that you could go into the CSS and start to see all the things related to the rating, and you can override or change or provide your own scenarios for what you would want. Maybe you don't like the color scheme that was automatically provided. So you can introduce your own styles there for
can
that.
Can I change
control.
It from a star to some completely different icon?
You could, even though it's maintained as a star in the rating. I mean, that's how it's called in some of the... But of course, you're going to be able to go in there and do whatever it is that you want to do to make that appropriate for your use in the application. So that was one, and just to show again the power of the options here, let's assume we're going to scale. You know, some organizations feel like you have to have a 10 scale. You know, so just to see how that would work, we'll go ahead and refresh the app, and we can see, of course, that it applied. Also, all those tooltips that are appearing, those are there by default, but we can affect those and modify those in our code as well, so they can be whatever we want them to say. So that is one. Now, I would love to see some other examples, and I think you have something waiting that might be just a little bit more, require a little more complexity than just the rating control.
Maybe just a little bit more. Yeah, let's go ahead and switch over to mine. I'm going to show you a demo that is in Code Show, so you guys are able to jump on this one. If you go to the pages and look for progress bar, you'll find it. Progress bar, like any other page, is a combination of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And I'm going to show you all three so you can see what a control consists of entirely. Just like Michael said, a progress control or any other control is going to usually consist of a div with a data-win-control, right? Well, the way that Microsoft implemented the web platform, I really, really love. Because if a control existed already in HTML5, we didn't go and overwrite it with our own. We just jumped on board the HTML5 standard. And if there wasn't an HTML5 control, like for instance for rating, then we went ahead and implemented it using the standards-based data-win-control.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, so the progress bar is an example of a control that already exists in Windows 8. It already exists, I'm sorry, in HTML5.
Sure.
You know that there are buttons already, there are input controls, there are a number of controls that already exist, and we don't want to override those. So progress exists in HTML5 as simply progress. So there's no proprietary any way of decorating this to turn this into a progress. You just say progress, and it automatically knows. But there are Windows 8 characteristic ways of making this progress bar look like a Windows 8 characteristic. Let me just go ahead and show you this example as it's executing in CodeShow. If you haven't seen it already on your own, you can go to progress bar, and you'll see that there are two types of progress bars, indeterminate and determinate. We're always frustrated by the indeterminate ones because they tell us that the system is doing something, but give us absolutely no indication of how long it's going to take. Hopefully, we don't have to see very much of these in an asynchronous programming environment, like Windows RT, but sometimes it's true that the system doesn't know how long it's going to take. Maybe it's a network call, and you don't know how long it's going to take to come back from that network call.
Right.
And so you need an indeterminate one. Now, this first one, the bar, did you see how that was implemented? Just like this. That's it. Okay? That's turning that progress bar into that flying series of dots that says I'm working on something, but I'm not going to be able to tell you how far along I am on it.
And here I thought the rating would even be simpler.
No.
You beat me there.
Absolutely.
That's even simpler.
That's simpler. Now, how does it know that I want it to be an indeterminate? It knows because for a determinate, you're going to have to specify some values or maximum values. And if you've specified values, then it says, well, he must know how long this is going to take. So I can render that as a determinate. But let's look at a couple of other ways that we can render the indeterminate progress bars.
Cool.
If I want a ring, or if I want a ring with some text, all I have to do is add a class to that. I want this to be a WinRing progress bar.
Nice.
Now, suddenly, we have a rotating ring. It's the time when you would want to use a ring is when you don't have as much space. You know, you want it to render smaller and have those little flying dots chase themselves. And then we can add some text to it with the ring with text. And notice that ring with text actually takes progress ring text for a label, and then that label wraps around, here's the end of the label, so that label wraps around that progress bar. So it's kind of interesting the way that one is formed. Now, for the determinate bar, like I mentioned, a determinate bar is determined by a progress indicator that has values, that has a max on it. So if you specify that currently this progress bar has a maximum of 100, but currently its value is 0, then it's going to render a bar that looks like this. This is an empty progress bar that's not making any progress yet.
Right.
But if I click advance, I can advance it somewhere.
Whoa.
Now, do you notice that it's using a transition here under the hood?
So because it's so graceful.
It's so graceful.
I like it.
It's sliding from one value to another, not just jumping.
Sure.
So I'm advancing, 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 and then I can reset. And when I reset, watch it animate.
That's right? Fluid.
Yeah, very fluid. It's fast and fluid. So let's look at how we implemented that. As far as the HTML, all we have is the progress bar. We have a button that I've given the name advance and a button that I've given the name reset. So this is HTML structure as it should be. All it is the structure. Progress bar, button, button. I'm just defining them.
Right.
But if I switch over to my CSS, now I have an opportunity to style things. Now, the only thing that I'm styling is for this, in the determinate section, I want the button to have a margin around it, all buttons, to have a margin around them of 5 pixels. That's what separates these buttons by 10 pixels. So that's the only thing I did to style those. Otherwise, those look the way they do because that's the way WinJS, the UI Lite CSS file that WinJS gave us, styled those things for us. So now let's look at the progressbar.js. In our page, in our ready function, we are doing the following. That means that this is going to execute whenever we've navigated to this page and the DOM has been loaded and is ready. That's why we use the word ready there.
Okay? I see.
You noticed in another demo, I'm not sure if I called it out explicitly, there's another function here called unload. And you can specify a function for what happens whenever the user navigates away from your page.
Okay.
But we'll skip that for now. So in the ready, I'm going to grab a reference to the progress bar. This is namespacing it. I'm talking about the progress bar page, the determinate section that I have it in, and I'm interested in the progress indicator there. There's only one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to do something with both of my buttons, advance and reset. I want to set their click events in the advance, all I do is I grab that progress bar that I already made up here, and I up its value by increasing it by 10%.
Ah.
I multiply its max by 0.1 to get what 10% of our progress bar is, and I increase that by 10%. So if this progress bar were dynamically changed to have a max of, say, 500 instead of 100, it would still advance 10% of it because of the way I've done that math.
That's great.
And then to reset it, all I do is simply change that value. Now notice that I don't have to worry about my transitions and my animations in my code now. All I'm doing is changing those values, and because those transitions have already been defined, those happen for me. I can just be free to think about my code, think about my logic, my flow.
That's great.
And the rest of the animations and the graceful animations are going to happen for me. So that's the progress bar. You've seen it first here.
That's very
what else
good.
Do we want to show?
Well, from my understanding, there's a few controls that are probably pretty important for developers to use. There's going to be examples I can think of, like list views.
How about a view box?
You know what? That would be fantastic.
Let's do a view box.
Let's do the view box.
That's a pretty common one. Actually, there are some scenarios that pretty much just demand a view box.
What would that be?
Well, let's say you're making a checkers game. If you're making a checkers game, of course, you're going to have a grid of squares. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the user is going to rotate their tablet. They still want to play checkers. And sometimes they're going to snap their tablet. And sometimes it's going to be fill. And sometimes it's going to be full. And when do you suppose that I want my checker squares to be square, and when do I want them to be rectangular?
I don't think you would.
It's nonsensical, isn't it?
It seems that way.
Yeah,
yes.
We always want our checkerboard to be the same proportions.
Go. Right.
We basically want to take whatever it is that we've created for our checkers board, and we want it to always look like that, but we want it to snap up and snap down in size, in scale, so that it fits in its parent container really well.
That's
it's a
cool.
very common scenario. So, if you go back to the demos in Code Show, sure, I'm using this a lot. If you go back to the demos and you go to the view box, you see just some little layout that I made. The Windows logo and some lorem ipsum.
Sure.
Text. Now, if I jump back to Visual Studio and instead of just hitting Control F5 to launch Code Show, if I hit F5, then I launch Code Show with debugging turned on. It's the same thing. I'm still at the view box.
Mm-hmm.
It navigated me back to that. But back in Visual Studio, I'm attached to that environment. I'm attached to that process, and I can debug that app.
Okay.
And I also have access to this DOM Explorer. And this DOM Explorer is incredibly helpful because this has a live connection with that app as it's running.
Cool.
And I can even do this, select element, which flips me back to the app and then gives me a kind of a browser developer tools type experience in selecting some element on that page.
Nice.
In which case it will take me to that element.
That's cool.
So here it's taken me to the element, and here it is, my view box.
View box.
Now, this view box is a data win control. Let's go look at the code itself for that. So we'll look up the ViewBox example. We'll open all three of those. And let's look at the ViewBox.html. Here is my image and my paragraph. This is that long lorem ipsum thing. They're inside of a div, and the div is inside of my ViewBox control. Notice, like you said, not all controls need to have their data win options. You
right.
can use them or not. This one just has data win control, and it's a WinJS view box. Now, this view box, here's the thing with the view box. The view box takes one and only one child. You can't give it two children, or 10 children, or 100 children. It only knows how to do something with one child.
I see.
Now, that's not really a limitation, because if you have 10 children, you just wrap them in a div, and now suddenly you have one child, right?
Sure.
Yeah. But the view box is expecting it to have one and only one child. So you can see that I've got an image and a paragraph. That's two. So I've wrapped those in a div. Now the view box has one child.
Right.
And let's go look at what it does to that child. So let's look back at our DOM Explorer.
Okay.
We can see our view box. Here's that child. That's inside of the view box.
Wait a minute. Did you have all that stuff on your div?
I really don't think I did.
I didn't think so.
I definitely didn't. It's injected that into there. It's injected an inline style, and it said that I want to do a transform, or originating at the top left, and I want to translate this element. That means move it somewhat.
Right.
And I also want to scale it. Look at what it's scaled it to, 2.4 almost.
Wow.
So it has scaled this up to fit the screen. That means that if you just drop a control in a view box, it really doesn't matter what size it is, the view box itself is going to take up, it's going to expand as much as it can, and then it's going to take its one child and scale it up to fit. So if you dropped a checkerboard inside of a view box, inside full mode, it's going to scale it up until it reaches the limiting height, and that's how big it's going to be, and it's going to do that by applying a transform and a scale.
That is cool.
So let's actually snap this. Boom.
Whoa.
Did you see what happened there?
I did. I can barely see it now.
Our content, let's zoom into that. Actually, I, over the break, installed Zoom It. Nice. But it's acting a little bit goofy. This is a double snap.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's just look at it for what it is. The view box is now snapped.
Right.
The contents look exactly like they did. They didn't get laid out again. They didn't get re-rendered.
Right.
They just got scaled. And if you look over here at our DOM Explorer, do you see anything different about our scale?
Oh, yeah. The scale went down.
Yeah. It ended up determining that it had to scale that down in order to fit. So that view box is tremendously helpful if you're working on something like a checker game or any other kind of game where you want to keep your proportions.
So let's see what would happen if you put that into a fill mode just by kind of dragging that little thing over across. Yeah. Okay, so it just kind of scales to whatever it can.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yep. And if you really want to test this, open it in the simulator, try it out on a 27-inch screen or a 10.6-inch screen, whatever you want.
That's fantastic.
Whatever you want to throw at it, it'll handle it.
Very good.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so I think it's important to maybe connect that with something that we were talking about earlier today, and that was one of the project template types. And that is, what do you perceive that connection might be between this and one of those project template types?
How about fixed layout?
Fixed layout. Kind of seems interesting, right? Fixed layout for something that dynamically scales. You know, it depends on how you want to look at it, but, you know, it's basically, that's the magic behind the whole fixed layout project template, is it automatically provides one of those for you.
Yeah. I'll tell you what you don't want to do, is you don't want to provide a layout that doesn't look right in every view. If it's a game, then obviously when you try to snap that game, it may not even be playable, but you can handle that correctly. If there's just absolutely no way to make it work, there are some tricks. We'll get to that in a second. But if you have an app that's not a checkers game, it's more like some dynamic content, like maybe the tiles that are showing up in Code Show, don't use Viewbox and try to scale everything.
Right.
Just design your app with flex boxes, grids, and the next thing we're going to talk about, which is list view, and make your app dynamic. Make it expand to the amount of room that the user has.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Okay, ready for a list view?
This one's a biggie.
This is a mammoth topic.
I mean, I would say it's probably the number one used control that I've used so far. I don't know about you, but
I use body, maybe more.
Oh, okay. So when we're talking about some of these new features, I think it's list view that's used quite a bit.
It is. It's used a ton.
Sure.
Okay, so let's take a look. Once again, luckily, this one is implemented in Code Show, so you guys can go look at this as well. I have been consolidating some of the things in here, so there are actually two tiles that speak to the list view.
Okay.
And I think I'll consolidate those at some point. So if you find it consolidated in the future, don't be surprised. But we have list views, and then we have hero images. We're going to look at both of those right now. They're both list views, so I'm going to move hero images in.
Great.
Let's look at list views first.
So what is a list view?
It's a kind of like a view that lists things.
I wasn't expecting that.
So much clearer now.
Yeah,
thank you.
Totally clear. It actually does have a little bit of a dual persona, though, because if you have any experience with XAML and C#, you might know that there's a list view in XAML, and there's also a grid view. And in that environment, a developer has to choose whether he, in general, wants to be laid out horizontally or vertically, and he chooses list view or grid view. But in the HTML world, there's really just the one, and it handles both cases.
Right.
Yeah. So what you're looking at now is a demo that shows two different versions of the list view. Does to show off a couple of its features. There really is so much about the list view that I expect this demo to really grow. So if you sign up for the source control on CodePlex and you get updates on CodeShow, then those examples will come in for you.
Cool.
But what this one has done is it has brought in the data. I've been able to bind to data, and it's brought in the data elements into this list, and it's laid it out like this. It might look like the, remember the Flexbox, how we were flowing?
Yeah.
And remember how the grid is good at making squares?
Yes.
It might look like that, but it's not actually implemented through by using either of those.
Okay.
It's actually implemented in a really fancy, advanced way that gives us a whole lot of control. One of the types of control that we get over this control is the ability, for instance, to just right-click on something and select it. In a Flexbox, you don't get the ability inherently to just right-click on something and select it.
So you didn't do any code to make that work?
Absolutely. None
at
all.
That's cool.
None at all. So we're going to see the really simple code that it takes to take some data and populate a list view like this.
Cool.
All right, let's do it. So we are back to CodeShow. I'm going to hit Shift F5 to turn off debug mode. And then I'm going to close down whatever I have open, hit Control semicolon to filter this by list view. Bada boom. There's my list view. Now let's look at the HTML first. Everybody close your eyes. Don't look at that. There's the HTML. In the HTML, here's what I have. I have a simple example here, and then ignore everything after that. This is the only code that I have, the only HTML markup that I have for that first example, the simple
list
view.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, there was a grouped one off to the right. Don't pay no attention to the man behind this.
You can collapse that, right?
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go. Whew, I feel much better.
Good.
Let me just go on a collapse frenzy here. Just get stuff out of your way you don't need. There we go. All right. We're only looking at the simple example. Now, in this simple example, I have a list view. It has a data win control of WinJS UI list view. Now, if you have a list view, you're going to be rendering some content in it. And if you're rendering some content in it, you're going to want to control how that content shows up.
Sure.
And that takes a template. So we use another control called the WinJS binding template. You're getting two for the price of one in this demo.
Wow.
Because I'm showing you the list view and the template that controls what the individual items look like inside.
Yeah, that's strange. So just declaring the template after the list view applies it?
It doesn't.
Oh.
No. We have a list view and we have a template, but behind the scenes, we're going to have to tie those together.
I see.
Yeah. But let's take a glance at this template. We've got a div with an image and another div. And look at this crazy syntax. Div or data.win.bind.
Hmm.
We haven't seen that yet.
Nope.
This is a binding statement. This acts kind of like knockout.js or something like that, where it's actually allowing us to determine that the source attribute, remember that images have a source attribute,
they
right?
Do.
But instead of specifying that, I get to tell this binding statement that I want that to come from the image URL.
Sweet.
And I want the inner text of this div to come from the name data, the name property of my bound data.
Does this also follow some rule that there can only be one container inside of that template?
No, not necessarily.
Whoa.
Yeah, you could put other things inside here. I've wrapped these in a div so that I have a little bit of control over the whole thing, but not necessarily.
Okay.
Okay, so let's go look at the JavaScript finally. And here's what we are working with. This is in the ready. So in the ready, we're going to declare an array. Instead of fetching this data from a service online or anything like that, we're just doing it locally, just to keep it simple for this example. So I'm declaring a list of 17 different attractions in Kauai. I believe we've looked at these already.
Mm-hmm.
And for each one, they're an object. You can see by the curly braces. We call these mustaches.
Gotcha.
That's a left mustache, and it's succeeded by a right mustache. And inside the mustaches, we have properties. So each of these attractions has a name, a category, and actually if I hit this, it breaks these down for me, location, an image URL, and finally, a description. Description. So these are the properties of our attraction, okay?
Okay.
And this is a whole list of all those properties, of all of those attractions. Now let's go down to our code. Make myself a little variable called LV that is nothing right now. Its value would be null. Now, in the simple script, I'm going to create for myself something called simple list, and I want that to be a new WinJS binding list. Now, this is a object in WinJS that WinJS gives us that acts a little bit like an array.
Okay.
But the big advantage that it has over an array is that it's live. It's observable, if you will.
Oh.
So when we add things to it or remove things from it, it fires the right events so that our UI can respond to that.
I see. So this is not a visual control.
No.
This is something behind the scenes that our list view is going to use.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's like a data source.
Okay.
And we can instantiate that by passing it in an array. And if we pass in those attractions, then by default, our simple list is going to contain a dynamic or observable list of attractions.
Cool.
That's something that we can bind our list to. So let's grab let's set our LV to that actual list view control. Notice that I have to use this win control property. This says fetch the DOM element, but now I'm not interested in the DOM element for this to get this list view. I'm interested in the actual strong type list view.
Oh.
So you can select the DOM element and then say win control, and that'll return for you the real list.
Because it was actually a div.
Yeah, it was a div.
But by calling win control, we're kind of getting what we really want out of it.
Exactly.
I see.
That's exactly right. Now there's only two things we need to do. We need to set that list view's data source,
mm-hmm.
and we set it to our little list, and we have to set it to the data source of that list.
Okay.
And the second thing we need to do is we need to set the item template. And this is just expecting a DOM element, so I can just select that item template that we made.
Gotcha. So again, the placement of that particular template on your markup wasn't really anything to do with associating it with it. It was that line of code you just showed
yep.
that said, hey, that's how you can do it.
Yep. In fact, I could cut this out and paste it anywhere else I wanted in this document. As long as that selector will find it, then it'll tie up correctly.
Okay.
All right. So again, we're ignoring all of this for now. We're just looking at this simple case. And remember, this is stored for eternity in Code Show, so when you forget how this works, because it takes me about 5 times doing something
right.
before I remember, now I can write it in my sleep. But
hey, can you remind me what Q is again? I keep forgetting.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good thing to refresh people's memories anyway, because they may not have been here yesterday. Q is a shortcut for query selector and query selector all. It's a function that I made that aggregates the two, and it doesn't care whether there's one or many.
Custom function you wrote that just is abbreviating some
stuff.
Okay.
And you could go look at that in ocho.js, and you can decide to use it, or you can decide to use the standard syntax.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
But mine is about 18 characters shorter. Okay, so we've done these 4 lines of code after... These don't count. We've done these 4 lines of code. And we have hopefully populated our list view. Well, we know we have because we already saw it. But
right.
we've populated our list view with all of these attractions. Now, the URLs are just links to the image out on the web.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. And let's go ahead and take a look at this again.